And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hal Turner Show, live from New York, New York, USA, on WBCQ, 7490 AM, International Shortwave, and Superstation 95, 95.1 FM in New York City. I am the voice of the common man. If you would like to call this program to express your opinions about news or issues that are important to you, the telephone number to dial, area code 201-771-3013. Again, that number, 201-771-3013. Lots and lots to talk about on the show tonight. I have no idea if I'm actually going to be able to get through all of it, but I'm going to give it the best that I can. Fortunately, 90% of my voice is back. As all of you who listen regularly know, I had a nasty sore throat that turned into laryngitis, and I was in terrible shape the past couple of weeks. I'd say I'm about 85-90% back, so it feels good to actually be able to talk again. This was something I was not able to do very well for a couple of weeks, which, you know, a lot of people who can't stand what I have to say were probably very happy during those 2 weeks, but too bad for them. I'm back. Anyway, on the show tonight, I want to talk about a number of issues, many of them having to do with politics, several of them having to do with environmental stuff as it relates to potential earthquakes, and also have to pay a lot of attention to what's going on over in the Middle East with respect to the situation in Syria and how governments near Syria, such as Turkey, are really, really getting caught doing some very bad things as they continue to try to forcibly overthrow the elected government of Syria. So let me begin tonight with some news from earlier in the week. All of you know that yesterday was Super Tuesday. A whole bunch of states had primary elections for the Democratic and Republican candidates who are seeking their party's nomination for president of the United States. And, you know, I have not decided for whom I am going to vote. I know what direction I'm leaning, but I have not decided. And as all of you know, I have not said publicly for whom I intend to vote, because I don't want anyone to be able to misuse my endorsement as a weapon against a candidate. And we saw that happen a couple of days ago when, out of the blue, a former elected representative for the United States House of Representatives in Washington, a guy named David Duke down in Louisiana, made a remark about one of the candidates, and the media picked it up and ran with it, claiming it was an endorsement, which it wasn't, and then labeling this guy as some sort of white supremacist or neo-Nazi, all sorts of scurrilous accusations. And then they proceeded to pummel Donald Trump and actually asked him to repudiate the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, hello, this is the year 2016. Is the Ku Klux Klan still even around? I mean, come on. What kind of nonsense is that? And so, you know, Donald Trump says, I don't know who these people are. I don't know. And then Jake Tapper from CNN says, well, will you here and now firmly repudiate these people and say that you don't want their votes? And I thought to myself, who the hell is this media talking head idiot, Jake Tapper, think he is asking anybody to repudiate anyone else's perfectly lawful vote. Since when in these United States of America is a citizen's lawful vote subject to what other people think about that citizen's social views? I mean, where does the media get off even suggesting to anyone that they should repudiate someone else's lawful vote? Does the media really think it's that important that anybody cares what they in the media think? Because they're not important. They're talking heads. Some could argue that I'm a talking head, except that this talking head actually has a brain in it that actually thinks. So I just found that amazing. And, you know, this is one of the reasons that I have not said anything about, you know, who I am inclined to vote for, or, you know, if I've made a decision, who I intend to vote for, because I know how the charlatans in the mass media operate, you know, and those charlatans are directly keyed in to vicious politically correct organizations, scurrilous people like, what's one of them? Oh, yeah, the Southern Poverty Law Center, right? The ultimate in politically correct fascism. And what's the other group? The one that always whines and complains. The Anti-Defamation League. Yeah, that's them. You know, they're still pushing World War II in front of everybody's face to try to get people to feel sorry for them so that they get advantages in culture and business. Right? Because that's, I mean, let's face it. World War II ended, what, 65, 70 years ago? Right? And what's the ADL out there pushing Adolf Hitler? I mean, the guy's dead, for Christ's sake. And, you know, they're out there laying guilt trips on people. But this has nothing to do with what they claim, what is that phrase? Oh, yeah, anti-Semitism? Yeah, the ADL has nothing to do with battling anti-Semitism. The ADL is nothing more than a public relations firm trying to give a select group of people a one-up over others based on a condition in society that hasn't existed for 70 years, right? They're scam artists. So you get the, like, Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL and these groups. They're the ones that have their, you know, crooked little fingers dialing the media up saying, ooh, so-and-so said this, and you better challenge candidate such-and-such about this. And, of course, both those groups routinely use the hate word when describing social, political, or cultural views with which they disagree, right? If you disagree with the ADL on any of its social, cultural, or political views, they smear you as a hater. If you disagree with the Southern Poverty Law Center on any of their social, cultural, or political views, they smear you as a bigot, a hater, a racist, right? They play the race card. So, you know, everybody's keyed in to what these charlatans are about, and that's what they are. The ADL, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and their friends in the media, these people are nothing more than political charlatans. They really are. I mean, they're bottom feeders. And it's really sad that in a society as advanced as ours, that people who, in my opinion, slither out from under rocks command this kind of input in the mass media. All right, so what we didn't hear about from any of these slimy charlatans was what Hillary Clinton did when she got to Texas recently. Right? One of the states having a big election, Super Tuesday, yesterday, was Texas. Guess what Hillary Clinton did upon her arrival in Texas very recently. She went immediately from the private Learjet that she had traveled in, and she ended up at a fundraiser. Now, I know you're all saying, so big deal. That's what politicians do. They go to fundraisers. Well, yeah, true enough. But who was it that was running this fundraiser? Well, it was a fundraiser in Beaumont, Texas. And it was being run by a Pakistani businessman named Tahir Javed. He hosted a reception for Clinton in his home in West Beaumont, Texas. And according to the sources that we have, Clinton spoke about education, health care, and individual freedoms for people of all backgrounds and faiths. Well, this Mr. Tahir Javed is a leading Muslim businessman and activist, and this fundraiser event was a Muslim fundraising event. One of the people that attended was Aisha Zahid, and Aisha Zahid said, and I quote, "Talking about Muslims and favoring Muslims, I really appreciate her effort she's making against Islamophobia. I really think she needs to be the next president of the United States," unquote. Now, not everyone there was a Muslim. Also in attendance were some congresspeople from the Houston area, Sheila Jackson Lee and Al Green. And not everyone was a fan. A handful of protesters demonstrated near this event, and they were protesting Clinton's response to the Benghazi attack. And I got to ask you, ladies and gentlemen, with all the terrorism perpetrated against our United States and our people, from 9/11 right up to the 14 people who were machine gunned to death in San Bernardino, California, why would Hillary do this? Well, one need only hearken back to Mrs. Clinton's official Twitter account, specifically to November 19th, 2015, at 10:57 a.m. That's when Mrs. Clinton personally tweeted, quote, "Let's be clear, Islam is not our adversary. Muslims are peaceful and tolerant people and have nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism," unquote. Don't believe me? Go back to Hillary Clinton's official Twitter account, at Hillary Clinton, and look at November 19th, 2015, at 10:57 a.m. So I ask again, with all the terrorism perpetrated against us and our people, from 9/11 right up through the folks that were murdered in San Bernardino, California, why would Hillary Clinton go to a Muslim fundraiser in Texas? Well, the answer is very simple, ladies and gentlemen, because Hillary Clinton is in the pocket of Muslims. That is the simple, ugly truth. And any of you that are surrounded by illiterate or uneducated or just downright stupid people who are considering voting for Hillary, you ought to remind them that a vote for Hillary Clinton is a vote for Muslim terrorists. That's where she's getting her money from, and that's whose pocket she's in. I'll be back.
Bells are ringing in the schoolyard, and we all went out those days. The village had met with a fancier rumble. I said, yes, it's time to play. All the nuns and the priests, they grabbed their rosaries as they pulled our bodies apart. The village had met, you lost the fight, but you gained my respect. You fight with so much heart. We're stubborn and fused with our blood on fire when we ate at Sunday Mass. We'll look any man straight in his eyes and say, kiss my Irish ass. You better kiss my Irish ass. All husbands and wives, they had a neighborhood pack. They called a Mackey's white trash behind our back. I was way too young to understand that. But if I did, I'd give it right back. Oh, me daddy'd be drunk on the lawn, yelling and screaming like he do. But sometimes my old man felt what he was feeling. Sometimes Mr. Mackey spoke the truth. We're stubborn and mules with our blood on fire when we ate at a Sunday Mass. We'll look any man straight in his eyes and say, kiss my Irish ass. You better kiss my Irish ass. Grandpa passed Wellis Island from the greatest of the motherlands. For he worked, provided for his family. He was a dedicated welding man. And he knew right from wrong like day and night. He could whip any fool in a bare-knuckle fight. He taught the country like he preached of God. One hell of an Irishman. We're stubborn as mules with our blood on fire when we ate at Sunday Mass. We'll look any man straight in his eyes and say, kiss my Irish ass. You better kiss my Irish ass. I'm of a distant relation to John Redmond. He was one of the greatest Irish rebels of his day. One bastard to another,
bastard.
And on down the line. And this is what my son will say. We're stubborn as mules with our blood on fire when we ate at a Sunday Mass. We'll look any man straight in his eyes and say, kiss my Irish ass. We're stubborn as mules with our blood on fire when we ate at a Sunday Mass. We'll look any man straight in his eyes and say, kiss my Irish ass! You better kiss my Irish ass! Go, 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 go!
And I'm back. Your stubborn-ass mule with his blood on fire. Hal Turner live from New York City. Kicking ass and taking names. Anybody who doesn't like it can kiss my Irish ass. Yeah. Oh, boy, oh, boy. So speaking of politics... Speaking of politics, just before Super Tuesday, the Right Honorable Ted Cruz Yeah. Ted Cruz apparently sent emissaries to the campaign of Donald Trump and Marco Rubio. And according to my very, very reliable sources, the Cruz campaign allegedly made an offer to Mr. Trump that Cruz would drop out of the primary races before Super Tuesday if Trump promised to nominate Ted Cruz to the United States Supreme Court to fill the vacant seat formerly held by Antonin Scalia. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Trump response. Well, the polite version, because you can imagine behind closed doors some of the language that might be used by those folks. The polite response was no. And I am told that a similar response was rendered by the Rubio campaign. And I think it's important to tell all of you this, because I know that there are a lot of misguided folks out there who think that maybe Ted Cruz ought to be president. Now, I do not see Senator Cruz as having the gravitas for the presidency. In my view, a president of the United States, be it a man or a woman, be this person straight or gay, be this person white or black or red or yellow or all the colors in between, a person who occupies that office must possess in themselves a deadly seriousness. The kind of seriousness that allows them to sit across the table from either an ally or an adversary to say what must be said, and more importantly, to damn well mean it. The world has to know that whoever is president of the United States will say what they mean, and mean what they say. We don't have that right now. We have limp-wrist, wishy-washy, a men's room attendant in lieu of a president. That's what we have now. And nowhere was that more clearly evident than the so-called red line with Syria had the use of chemical weapons in the ongoing civil war. It was a red line that Barack Hussein Obama had allegedly drawn, and if that red line was crossed, whoa boy! Well, it looked as though possibly that red line had been crossed, and the destroyers and guided missile cruisers were dispatched, and the bombers were being pre-positioned, and nothing happened. Wimpy, wimpy! And that was when really all hell broke loose around the world, because everyone around the world realized Barack Obama's a pushover. All right, the guy does not mean what he says. He says things and backs away from them. The guy's got no heart, no stones, right, to back up what he says. And so, you know, people can laugh at him now, because even though he occupies the most politically powerful office on earth, that power is meaningless because he is either incapable of wielding it or unwilling to wield it. So when I see a guy like Ted Cruz allegedly making offers to the Rubio and Trump campaigns to bow out of the race if he gets a nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court, I immediately see a snake. A person who does that, to me, is my opinion, is a snake. That person is looking out only for their own interests and not the interests of the country. And I knew, when I heard that this offer was allegedly made to the Trump campaign, I knew without even hearing what the answer would be. You know, it'd be kiss my, well, anyway, you know what the answer was, right? Or probably was. So, Rubio, I wasn't so sure, but I wanted you to know that this information had crossed my desk. Now, some of you who are new listeners, and I know there's a bunch of you out there, because I'm going to interview a guest tonight on the show, right? Professor Ramesh Singh from a university out in California, Chapman University in Orange, California. He is a professor of environmental science. He wrote a paper that was a peer-reviewed paper, and it was published in the journal Geophysics. And it has to do with certain aspects of earthquakes and some of the things that may precede the occurrence of an earthquake. So I'm going to interview him later. So I know that because I'm going to interview him, there are a lot of folks that maybe never tuned into this program before who aren't familiar with me and, you know, are getting an earful right now. But I say this about Cruz, and when I say something, you can take it to heart, because for 15 years I worked with the FBI, right? From 1993 to 2008, I was working with the FBI. And in the last several years, from 2003 to 2008, I worked with the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force. It was a national security intelligence asset. I handled national security of the United States, terrorism, and foreign counterintelligence. And all of this came out in federal court in Brooklyn, New York, back in 2010 as part of a big trial there. So, you know, those of you who aren't familiar with me, now you know that I have a very long background in intelligence, clandestine service type stuff. And so I have many, many colleagues that remain in the clandestine service of the United States with whom I speak to regularly, and I get tons of information, and it is 100% reliable. Let me give you an example. A few weeks ago on this program, a caller asked, in relation to Hillary Clinton, what I thought the political ramifications for her would be over the Benghazi situation, where our embassy in Benghazi, Libya, was attacked, and where the U.S. ambassador there was murdered along with three other people. And I replied on this program, and it's up on the archives, it's there. I replied that Benghazi was a gun running operation, right? We the United States were running guns through the embassy, supplying those guns to rebels and fanatics in Libya and elsewhere, who were then taking those guns and using them as a proxy army to go, you know, do our dirty business in various countries in the Middle East. And a bunch of folks contacted me after that saying, "You're full of crap." Well, none other than the New York Times this week ran a story about Hillary Clinton, a very lengthy story. And in the story, three quarters of the way buried in the story, they admit the U.S. was running guns through Benghazi. I told you, I'll be back.
Are you losing your competitive edge? Do you go to bed at night crowing like a rooster, but wake up clucking like a hen? Informal interviews worldwide suggest that many men under 40 feel like they're over 65. We're eating more, living longer, and feeling worse than at any time in history. Why? The answer, my friend,
is blown in the wind.
No. The answer is in the food we eat. Chemical contamination and chronic depletion of the soil have left our food supply insufficient to support a stressful and egotistical lifestyle. Eating too much beef can give you a heart attack. Chicken is well known for its bacteriological contamination. Eating too high on the hog can lead to excessive animalistic behavior among men. And tuna? Well, no, my friend, the answer lies in a vegetarian diet. One consisting of blue, green, red, and yellow algae. Pond scum. Informed sources suggest that Ted Turner may be about to devote over $1 billion of his own hard-earned money to encourage people to eat very low on the food chain. Focus groups in New York and New Jersey suggest that people are beginning to accept the idea of ordinary pond scum as legitimate nutrition in overwhelming numbers. Someday we'll all eat this way. The highest quality form of this tasty nutritional wonder substance is found in only two places on the face of the earth. In the upper regions of Lake Klamath in Oregon State, and in a slimy dog-watering dish near Marshalltown, Iowa. But you, through this incredible offer, can purchase a 30-day supply for just $19.95. Call 1-800-699-6969. Have your credit card handy and come face-to-face with your future. Pond scum. It's what's for breakfast. My sentiments exactly.
And I'm back. Hal Turner, live from New York City on WBCQ, 7490 AM, International Shortwave, and 95.1 FM, Superstation 95, in New York City. And I was talking about some political things for new listeners, and I just, while we took that brief pseudo-commercial break, you know, those little breaks when I can grab a quick sip of water or coffee or something, and just take a minute to organize my thoughts. I looked up the New York Times article that I referenced. The article was published on February 28th. The title of the article, Hillary Clinton, Smart Power and a Dictator's Fall, by Joe Becker and Scott Shane. And, the search engine found it on February 28th, but the date in the article is February 27th, all right? And buried in this article is a paragraph. Let me just see if I can find it here for you very quickly. I used the word directive, but I think, here we go. Yeah, buried in the article, about three quarters of the way through it. It says, in fact, there was reason to worry. Mr. Jibril, she's talking about a guy that Hillary Clinton was negotiating with. Mr. Jibril himself described in an interview how a French shipment of missiles and machine guns had gone awry. At a June meeting, President Sarkozy had agreed to, quote, ask our Arab friends, unquote, to supply the Transnational Council with the weapons, Mr. Jibril said, but he said the acting defense minister diverted them to a militia led by Abdel Hakim Belhaj, a militant Islamist who had once been held in a secret prison by the CIA. Mrs. Clinton understood the hazards, but also weighed the costs of not acting, aides said. They described her as comfortable with feeling her way through a problem without being certain of the outcome. Here it comes. Ready, folks? President Obama ultimately took her side, according to the administration officials who described the debate. after he signed a secret document called a presidential finding approving a covert operation, a list of approved weaponry was drawn up. The shipments arranged by the United States and other Western countries generally arrived through Benghazi in eastern Libya. Now there it is. A couple weeks after I made clear on this program that the reason that embassy in Benghazi was attacked was because it was a gun-running operation by the United States. The reason that assistance was not sent to that embassy was because Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton did not want the responding troops to find out that the U.S., through the State Department, was running guns to rebels in Libya and elsewhere in the Middle East, and they were doing it through the embassy in Benghazi. That's why those four Americans died. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama didn't want to get caught running guns to rebels and Al-Qaeda militants in the Middle East, which is what they were doing at the embassy in Benghazi, Libya. So I said this 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe, and here it is in the New York Times. Which gets me back to when I tell you stuff about politics, you can believe it, because I do have the contacts. People who are in a position to know and who do know. Let's talk a little further about politics. Ladies and gentlemen, it appears that candidate Marco Rubio may have a drug problem. The other night at one of the Republican debates, Mr. Rubio was seen with what appeared to be a prescription bottle in his hand. He had taken it out of his pocket. He very discreetly took something out of the bottle and consumed it. I'm going out on a limb here to suggest that it was a pill. Now, of course, Mr. Rubio may be battling some sort of health issue. I thought that it was very odd for a man in the middle of a televised presidential debate to pull a prescription bottle out of his pocket and take a pill on national television. And I started to wonder, I said, you know, this guy is always sweating profusely. And I, like so many others, have seen people who are in the throes of drug addiction. They sweat a lot. And I started to wonder myself, after seeing him in the debate take a pill, I said, well, you know, maybe he's got a cold. Maybe he's sick. I don't know. Well, guess what? He did it again today. And this time, we have video of it. Superstation 95, the news crew over here, has the video. And they have a story up on the website, superstation95.com, where you can go and see it happen with your own eyes. Rubio in the video, it's only about 50 seconds long, 45 or 50 seconds long. You can see in the video, Rubio is sweating profusely. His forehead is glistening with sweat. He very sneakily, I mean, you could tell he was deliberately trying to hide what he was doing, reaches into his pocket, takes something out. And with a quick move with his hand, he turns his head to the side, he puts something in his mouth, and then he goes about resuming what he was doing at this political campaign function. Again, I don't know if the guy's got some sort of nervous issue. I don't know if he has some sort of ongoing health problem. But it seems to me that there's a time and a place for anybody to take medication. And the time and the place is never in the middle of a public political campaign, right? There's always going to be time later to drop in the men's room, stop at a water fountain, grab a cup of coffee afterwards. But this guy apparently is in such need of whatever he is taking out of his pocket that he is compelled to do it in public. I am starting to be concerned. This is my own personal feeling, right? Not making an accusation. I'm simply expressing my own personal concern. My personal concern is that Marco Rubio has a drug problem. A drug problem that is so severe, he cannot not do it even when he's in public. And I don't know that a person who perhaps, maybe, might be an active drug addict is someone we want with his finger on the nuclear button in the White House. Right? I'm just telling you, I'm keeping it real with you folks. I don't want a drug addict with his finger on the nuclear button in the White House. Now you go look at the video for yourselves, right? You make your own decision. But I think Marco Rubio may have an active drug addiction, and I think it may be something that ought to give every American pause. Because if I'm correct, and I admit I may be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I apologize. But I don't think I'm wrong. I've seen how drug addicts do their thing. And I don't think we want somebody with a drug problem in a position to launch nuclear weapons. I'm sorry. So you take a look at the video yourselves and see what you think. All right. Today is March 2, 2016. About 4 days ago, February 26, 27, a guy named Mike Morales put a video up on YouTube. And I don't know who Mike Morales is. He and I have never met. He and I have never spoken. I don't communicate with him by email. I have no idea who this guy is or where he is. But he put a video up on YouTube, and this video got sent over here to Superstation 95. And basically what it was, it showed Mr. Morales utilizing satellite information, which is freely available to the general public. And this satellite shows many aspects of what's going on in the environment around the planet. It can tell folks some wind speeds. It can show you where the high pressure systems are, the low pressure systems. It can show you the wind speeds at various altitudes. So if you want to look at only, let's say, the jet stream, you can do that. If you want to look at the surface winds to find the speed and direction, you can do that. Some of the other things that this free software does is it shows pollution, right? Carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, maybe sulfur dioxide. And, you know, there's a little box at the bottom left of this screen where you can click the box. It brings up a control panel, and you can select what you want to look at. You can select what altitudes you want to look at it. And in his video, Mike Morales selected to look at carbon monoxide levels around the world. And he clicked it, and you saw on the screen it came up. He had the United States positioned on his screen. And there was this gigantic, dense carbon monoxide cloud that ran from about San Diego, California, all the way up past San Francisco. Then it moved inland a little bit, and it broke up a little bit, and then up by Seattle, and maybe from Portland to Seattle, up into Vancouver. It's this big, dense cloud of carbon monoxide. And in his video, Mike Morales backed up 6 hours and then let it play. This cloud, this burst of carbon monoxide, happened in less than 3 hours. Ladies and gentlemen, it was so thick and so dense over such a big area, nowhere else on planet Earth had anything even close. I'll talk more when I get back.
Gun control is the best thing you can do for crooks and gangsters. I want you to have nothing. If I'm a bad guy, I'm always going to have a gun.
Sammy Gravano, convicted mob assassin.
Gun control is not about stopping crime. It's about disarming America.
The police hardly ever stop crime. They're called after a crime has been committed. Politicians know this. So why are they passing gun control laws that take away your self-defense firearms?
Gun control is not about stopping crime. It's about disarming America.
The president and other politicians are protected by men carrying rifles and pistols with high-capacity magazines, but they're outlawing them for you and me. Do they think their lives are more important than ours?
Gun control is not about stopping crime. It's about disarming America.
The militia includes all adult Americans, but the government is forbidding us from buying or owning militia rifles. Why is the government so eager to disarm the people they're supposed to serve?
Gun control is not about stopping crime. It's about disarming America. To keep hearing these ads, send checks to Citizens of America, 2118 Wilshire Boulevard, number 447, Santa Monica, California, 90403, or learn more at citizensofamerica.org.
2, 3.
Hey,
and we're back. The Hal Turner Show, live from New York, New York, USA. Yes, we listen to Southern Rock up here in New York City. And, God, I love Southern Rock. Southern Rock is, like, so great. And you don't get much of it anymore, right? But, boy, oh, boy, do I love Southern Rock. Anyway, so I'm talking about this bloom of carbon monoxide all up and down the west coast of the United States, took place within a three-hour period. It burst up so broadly that it almost covered the entire state of California. It was an enormous area. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this cannot take place as a result of human activity. Yes, we can have a buildup over time of smog. If there's stagnant air, the ozone can build up. Carbon monoxide gets trapped. We all know that this can happen over time. That's why we get air quality alerts. When it happens, you know, we get told there's something going on. But this particular burst of carbon monoxide could not occur by the activities of men. It was simply too dense, over too big an area, and happened too quickly. Let me put that in perspective for you. The typical, everyday average of carbon monoxide anywhere in the United States is about 150 parts per billion. All right? Some place a little lower, some place a little higher, but about 150 parts per billion. There were parts of this bloom that caused the concentration of carbon monoxide in 3 hours to rise from 150 parts per billion to 40,018 parts per billion. Wow. Wow. That's a lot of carbon monoxide. So Mr. Morales had done some research, and Mr. Morales came upon a scientific paper by an environmental scientist named Ramesh Singh, who studied earthquakes. And in 2001, there was an earthquake in a place called Gujarat, India. 20,000 people were killed in this earthquake in Gujarat, India. And Ramesh Singh studied this earthquake after the fact. All right? And one of the things he looked at was satellite data to see if there was anything that happened before this earthquake that may have signaled that an earthquake was coming. And lo and behold, Professor Singh found that there was a strong and sudden emission of carbon monoxide 2 or 3 days before this magnitude 7.6 earthquake. All right? So, Professor Singh writes a paper, and he submits it for peer review, and it undergoes peer review, and it is published in April of 2010 in the journal Geophysics. Now, you don't just write a paper and have it printed by a scientific journal. It's a big process to get a scientific journal to publish your paper. This guy did it. His peers reviewed it. They found his data to be solid. And the conclusion of his paper was that in some circumstances, not all, but in some circumstances, depending upon things like the makeup of the ground beneath the surface, the water table level, and, you know, what goes on prior to an earthquake, there may be an emission of carbon monoxide out of the ground before a major earthquake. And that peer-reviewed paper is available on the internet for folks who want to subscribe to it and take a copy. All right? So when Superstation 95 here in New York received this video, they put a reporter on it, and the reporter did some research, and the reporter verified the satellite data was in fact coming from the GOES 5 satellite systems and the EAS Terra satellite. I think I got that right. And that these satellites are operated by NASA. They're controlled and administered through the Goddard Space Flight Center. This is serious stuff, right? This is not bull crap. And then they obtained the copy of Professor Singh's paper, and they read it, and they ran a story that basically said there's this huge bloom of carbon monoxide on the West Coast, and according to this scientific paper by this scientist, this could be a signal of a coming large earthquake. Then they did more research, and they found out that this was not the first time that an emission of gas from the ground happened before a major earthquake. They found another earthquake in 1976 in Tangshan, China, which is about 100 miles east of Beijing. Excuse me. An earthquake took place there in 1976 without warning, but residents in the area had reported for days earlier sudden bursts of gas coming up out of the wells in the villages around Tangshan. And when this earthquake hit in Tangshan, it hit without warning. It hit at about 3:42 a.m. local time in China. It destroyed 93% of the residential buildings and killed 242,000 people. Yeah. So when they found this out, they did a follow-up story on what's going on in the West Coast. And they included references, scientific references, and everything. Well, you know, Superstation 95 is a pretty big media outlet. And when, some guy like Mike Morales puts a little video on YouTube, you know, I think his video got 205,000 views, right? When Superstation 95 puts up an article, you know, we get 295,000 views in 3 hours. I mean, it's a pretty well-visited website. And, you know, I don't contribute any of the articles to that website. I wrote one, and the one that I wrote had my name on the byline and my picture, right? I don't contribute any other news to that website. So, all hell broke loose, right? Superstation 95 runs it, and bam, this thing starts spreading all over the internet like crazy. And people start getting scared. Now, they were careful. The guys that wrote this story, they repeatedly put in bold letters, do not panic. This may not happen. And they went on to say things like they were just informing the public so that if the public felt it wanted to take some precautions, that it could. But there was no need to panic because, you know, this may not happen. Well, people panicked anyway. And they were calling newspapers. They were calling TV stations. They were calling the fire department asking, why aren't we making preparations? What do you want? What preparations do you want to make for an earthquake? What would you like the fire department to do in preparation for an earthquake? I don't get it, right? We can't predict earthquakes. In fact, the article even said that. The article even said, science, present-day science, does not have the ability to predict earthquakes, and we are not doing that now. It says it right in the article. People apparently read right past things like that. I don't get it. You know, maybe our society has become dumb. Maybe a lot of people out there were not properly educated and don't have the ability to comprehend what they're reading. Because a lot of people panicked. Well, as soon as a lot of people panic, the folks in the government want to step on it right away to, oh, stop it, stop it. We got to crush this. We've got to shut this down. And so they get, like, they're useful idiots in the media, people like a guy named Oxley at a newspaper or a radio station, KIRO, in, what is it, Portland or Seattle or somewhere out there in the Northwest. They get them to publish stories saying, don't worry, there's nothing to worry about. And then they get, you know, other useful idiots, guys like, I think his name is John Vidali from, you know, the Seattle, some university's Pacific Earthquake something center or whatever it is, and they get quoted, oh, there's no correlation to this. It was a theory from back in the 1970s, and there's no conclusive proof, and you shouldn't pay attention to this. You see, when you start coming out with stupid rebuttals like that, especially to a news organization here in New York City, where, you know, pardon me for patting ourselves on the back. New York City is where the best of the best exist. You don't get to make it here in New York City unless you're the best. It's just that simple. And so when these rinky-dink little outfits out in East Jibip, Washington or Oregon, wherever they are, start saying, oh, there's nothing to worry about, and then start saying there's no conclusive proof, when the article that was written links directly to the scientific paper showing there's conclusive proof, it starts to get on the nerves of the people out here. Because, you know, we're very good at what we do. And I'm not bragging, all right? Well, maybe I am a little, but we really are pretty damn good at what we do. And it's insulting to us when people look at our work and instead of calling us, just write an article rebutting us. Incidentally, this guy, this reporter named Oxley, wrote his article without calling Superstation 95. He wrote an article about Superstation 95 story without calling Superstation 95. Let me ask you something, folks. I mean, you guys aren't all journalists, right? You guys have whatever you do as, for a living. But, I mean, just common sense. If you're in the media and you're going to write a story about something, don't you contact the people that you're going to write about, at least to try to, you know, get their side of things or to clear up any misunderstandings or, I mean, isn't there some basic journalistic responsibility to actually get the facts from the people you're writing about? Well, you know, this guy Oxley at MyNorthwest.com, you know, young guy, probably wet behind the ears, he didn't bother to call. And he didn't bother to email them. And he didn't bother to fax, right, the newsroom over at Superstation 95. He just wrote an article disparaging their work. And so, as the news staff does here, they got together with the editors and they composed a rebuttal. And they updated the story with a rebuttal. In the email that came in about this carbon monoxide bloom was an email from Professor Ramesh Singh. He is, as I said earlier, a professor of environmental sciences at Chapman University in Orange, California. And I call him doctor, but I'm actually not sure if he's a doctor. I know he's a professor. But, you know, we tend to refer to folks who hold such positions as doc, right? Because generally they are. But and I'm not trying to downplay him or anything. I just don't want to be disrespectful, right? So the newsroom contacted him back and said, would you like to be on our radio station tonight for an interview? You know, you can reach us at this number. And he called, and the newsroom put him in touch with me, and we arranged earlier to do an interview, but we recorded it. It's not long, maybe 6 minutes. So I see that it is 10:02 p.m. here in the East Coast of the United States. I have not taken a break for the top of the hour, right? But I am going to I'm going to play the interview that I had by telephone with Dr. Ramesh Singh. And, you know, you guys can hear for yourselves what he has to say. Now, before I play that interview, I want to make clear that the media out in the Pacific Northwest that wrote stories about this, you know, like I said, KIRO, I think is one of the stations, MyNorthwest.com, KATU, is one of the TV stations out there that wrote. And none of them bothered to call the newsroom here or email or fax or anything. They just, you know, went ahead and wrote their stories. So I don't know what kind of shoddy journalistic standards they have out in the West Coast. And I don't know what kind of incompetent editors they must have at MyNorthwest.com and KATU TV. Out there, that these editors would allow an article to be published without contacting the object of the article. That's just mind-boggling to me. But, you know, among other things, they said there was no conclusive proof that CO emissions can come out with prior to an earthquake when, in fact, it was. And, you know, folks don't need to be worried, yada, yada, yada. And so it was good that we were able to get a hold of Dr. Ramesh Singh for this interview. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the scientific professionals that is now at the heart of this growing scandal regarding the carbon monoxide that was allegedly picked up by satellites on the west coast of the United States is a professor at the University of Chapman, in Orange, California. And his name is Ramesh Singh. And I am pleased to welcome Dr. Singh to the Hal Turner Show on WBCQ and 95.1 FM in New York City. Dr. Singh, welcome to the airwaves.
Thank you very much.
Doc, you are apparently aware that several videos came out from folks who are interested in satellite data, and those folks in their videos pointed out to the world that carbon monoxide was being picked up in vast amounts along the West Coast, and that they thought that this might be a precursor to an earthquake. And Superstation 95 in New York City, their news team got a copy of this video. They did some investigating, and Superstation 95 ran a news story about this, which has caused quite an upheaval. Folks are quite involved, and some of them are very upset about what was reported. You are quoted in this story. You did a paper in that was published in 2010 regarding some anomalies that took place around the time of a very bad earthquake in Gujarat, India. That earthquake took place in January 2001. Sir, can you please tell us about your study, your scientific paper, concerning the earthquake that took place in India and how carbon monoxide emissions came to light?
The question is, I was not knowing anything about the website. It was a Monday morning, 7 o'clock. I got an email from one of my colleagues who works at NASA Ames, showing that I'm quoted related with the carbon monoxide all along the West Coast. Okay, and I was on the bed, and I replied to him, "Oh God, this is not related with the earthquake, okay, any earthquake." But after some time, I started getting so many mails, and till today, I must have received about 70 mails from North Carolina in East Coast, from mid U.S., and also from California. The question is, people, they related this CO anomaly based on the NASA GEOS 5 chem model, and this model is not validated. And people should know this. And the question is, little knowledge is always dangerous, okay, to relate this. And people, they dig out from the Google. My paper, my work, which was published in 2010, associated with the Gujarat earthquake. The question is, all over the globe, the earthquake occurs. Nobody is going to stop these earthquakes. But the question is, based on the geology, based on the geo-environment, sometimes the gases, which is stored in the earth, okay, get released. And in Gujarat earthquake, the water table was very, very low, and this is why we got a CO and other gases. The question is, in NASA satellites, there are so many satellites, was capable of recording CO at that time. So we analyzed those data in depth, and we found that the few days prior to the Gujarat earthquake, there was an anomaly. Similar to this, for example, the scientists have published a paper related with the Kobe earthquake of 17th March 2001, and they found the NO2 anomaly. Now the question is, California and the USGS has made a lot of measurements, and they have not found any gas emission from California. The question is, the earthquake occurs throughout the globe, but the question is, depending upon the water table, depending upon the geology, gas can be emitted. In California, the geology is such, and the water table is very deep. There is no question of emission so far we have recorded. So the question is, blindly, one should not correlate this CO anomaly. What is it, by mistake they have seen this, with any impending earthquake. And of course, you know, we have analyzed those data for myself, some other satellite data, and what I can see that this CO anomaly in the Southern California is associated with the blowout of the ground storage in Aliso Canyon. And of course, this is the methane, and when the methane emission takes place, it goes in the atmosphere, and the methane has a very short life, and then it is converted into carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide. And if we are getting carbon monoxide anomaly through other satellite, so what should be causes? And I'm pained that these websites, without any scientific understanding, they put this and then they related with my paper of 2010 and started saying that the big earthquake is on the door. And the people are so scared. I received a mail that my family lives in Vancouver, my family lives in Seattle, and we want to evacuate this. And I told them, no, don't worry. Earthquakes are bound to occur anywhere. And USGS has a dense network of the instruments all along the San Andreas Fault. And if there's anything, we should get any sign or the frequency of the earthquake may increase. But this CO anomaly is not associated with any big earthquake.
Okay, now you've made that very, very clear, and I am very grateful that you've taken the time to do that, Doctor. So now that you've made your statement, I have some questions. Is that all right? All right, you indicated that in the Gujarat, India earthquake, you had gone back, you had analyzed some validated satellite data, and you found an anomaly in that earthquake in 2001 where carbon monoxide had been emitted from the ground several days prior to that earthquake. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you have also said that the different satellites, the GEOS-5, which are the satellites involved in the West Coast carbon monoxide information, that those are different satellites, correct?
This is a model result. Okay, this model result must be based on some ground data, some satellite data, okay? And if you see the website, they always, you can see, they try to update automatically 3 hours. But this is the experimental and nothing to do with the serious CO anomaly. Okay?
All right, that's fine. I understand that. And here's my question.
Yes.
You very specifically mentioned the serious leak of methane gas from the Aliso Canyon storage facility out in Porter Ranch, California. And you said, just a few moments ago, if I understood you correctly, you said that the methane leaches into the water table, it has a very short life, and it converts into, among other things, carbon monoxide, and that's why it leached out. Did I understand you correctly?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, sir, my question then is, since the leak at Aliso Canyon took place from last October until February 22nd of this year, why then was there no leaching of carbon dioxide all that time from October all the way through February?
From October, the carbon monoxide is increasing, okay, in this area. And the question is, if there is a gas emitted, it goes in the atmosphere. Depending upon the wind, it spreads out. And generally here, the winds are westerly, southwesterly, southeasterly, and what we found that this anomaly is from the different satellite data spreads over in the southwest, southeast direction.
Okay, but my question, sir, was if this burst of carbon monoxide that was first detected by this satellite on February 27th, why didn't it occur? Why wasn't it picked up prior to that when the Aliso Canyon leak was taking place all the way back to October?
You are referring with the NASA GOC model.
Okay.
And nobody earlier saw that. People started seeing only from whatever website is showing only from the recent one. Okay. So they did not, Aliso Canyon, emission was not in the model, or people have not seen, I have not seen that image from October. Okay. But I am seeing some other data, and I am seeing that there is a continuous increase of the CO from the different satellites, and those satellites are well validated, okay, and we are working on that.
All right. So then my next question, sir, is if NASA, let me preface my question by telling you NASA issued a statement on March 1st, and their statement said that on February 18th, they put the GEOS 5 satellite into safe mode and closed its doors so that they could reposition that satellite, which they did, and they put it back into science mode on February 24th. And NASA went on to say that the readings which this satellite reported, which began on February 27th, took place because the satellite and its long-wave infrared had not yet stabilized. So are we to believe that NASA's state-of-the-art satellite needs more than 3 whole days before its instruments are reliable?
I cannot comment on that. Okay, better you ask NASA because I cannot say anything.
All right.
About that.
Then continuing in that thought, if the readings that were picked up and reported by the satellite were inaccurate, in other words, if they weren't validated by ground sensors, then the NASA explanation of the satellite not being stabilized might make sense. What doesn't make sense to me, and perhaps you can help me understand this, is as the GEOS 5 satellite continued to report on February 28, 29, March 1, it shows that giant emission of carbon monoxide gradually dissipating in the wind. And my question to you, sir, is if there was no burst of carbon monoxide, then why would the same data points show a gradual diffusion of that carbon monoxide if it wasn't there to begin with?
The question is, I cannot comment anything about the NASA.
Okay.
I'm not involved in that development or any technicality. Okay, we are users of the product. Okay, so I'm seeing NASA its product, which is very reliable, which is very available. Okay, and then now I have started that one, and then whatever you saw in my paper, that was the other satellite data. Okay. So the question is, whatever emission one can see, this is just like a plume coming from any coal power plant or industry. It goes in the atmosphere, it spreads, it dissipates with the time. Okay? So this is a very simple thing. So when it is dissipating, it means it is going spreading in the atmosphere. Okay.
Now, so the reason I asked you these two questions, Doc, is I was leading up to this. NASA claimed that the reading was wrong. But if the reading was wrong, the carbon monoxide was not there. And the ground sensors seem to claim that the carbon monoxide was not there. And yet we have this natural dissipation. So I think the first question any rational person has to ask is, was there a burst, a plume of carbon monoxide?
Look, I'm not commenting on this NASA GOC model results, okay?
All right.
I cannot comment on that.
All right, then let me ask you this, sir. Let's go to your scientific paper about the Gujarat earthquake in India. Since you have established through peer-reviewed work that it is possible under certain circumstances, not everywhere and not always, but it is possible that there would be an emission of gases from the ground prior to an earthquake, is it possible that there was, in fact, an emission from the ground because tectonic plates are colliding and they squeezed the gas out along the west coast of this country?
Yes. And we have not been able to understand the whole thing. For understanding this, we need a lot of information inside the Earth. Okay. The basic thing what we understand, that the rocks are storage of the gases, depending upon what kind of rocks, depending upon the wide space, depending upon the porosity. Just like I said, I told you, in Gujarat, the water table is very, very close. When the water table is close, sometimes when the stresses are built up and the stresses trigger earthquakes, and then the water table also fluctuates. And when the water table fluctuates, the gases is stored in the upper surface, it gets released, okay? And this is what we can find depending upon the area, depending upon the local geo-environment, okay? And so far in California, I have not seen any kind of emission there. Okay, earthquakes are always occurring of a lower magnitude, and sometimes there were a few earthquakes of higher magnitude, and we have not seen any type of gas emission, to best of my knowledge.
All right, now let's pretend for just a moment, and this is just a hypothesis. I don't want anybody getting nervous or upset or panicking, and I suppose that you don't want anybody getting nervous either.
Yes, because that really people get the anxiety and they are worried. They want to evacuate the area, and so far no scientists. We don't have any indicator to predict earthquake.
I understand that. It's just beyond our scientific capability.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you, the reason I pose this hypothetical question, Professor, if a terrible earthquake actually does happen within the next week or two, would that validate one more time your conclusion?
No. No. Okay. Not from California. Okay.
Okay.
Not from California, because California, we understand that the geology, the geo-environment is quite different, okay? And of course, I have a danger that if suppose something happens today, people will start that, there was a carbon monoxide, and because of that, the earthquake has occurred. Okay. So that, I will say, that will be a fluke. Okay. And as a scientist, I do not want to be associated with any kind of fluke.
I agree. Scientists deal in facts and things that can be proven, right?
Yes.
All right. Doctor, you've been a tremendous help. Professor, you're a terrific person. Thank you ever so much for agreeing to come on the air. Is there anything else that you would like to tell the public before I let you go?
Yes. I want to tell the public that one should not go for the shallow science, and one should have a good science background. If he doesn't know, they can talk to scientists, and earthquakes are bound to occur anywhere. And I was in the East Coast, and some of my friends, they say, oh, where are you going? On the West Coast? West Coast is home for a big earthquake, you see. I said, no problem. Okay, I'm an earthquake scientist. And in 2011, the earthquake occurred in Mineral, Virginia, on the East Coast, you see. So earthquakes are bound to occur, and the earthquake kills, the buildings kill the people, not the earthquake. And we should try to make our building be well-designed to save our lives, to save our property. That is the message I want to give to the public.
And you just did, Doctor. I thank you so very much for being here. And I hope that in the future, if questions of a scientific nature arise, that we here can give you a call and get your expert view.
Yeah, you are most welcome. You can be there because we would like to save the life of people, okay? We would like to tell their so that they can understand, increase their scientific understanding with the facts and figures, whatever is happening.
Well, Dr. Ramesh Sain from the Chapman University in Orange, California, thank you for being on WBCQ and Superstation 95.
Thank you very much.
And that was the recorded interview that was recorded about 12:30 p.m. Eastern U.S. time today, ladies and gentlemen. And I was in a tough spot with this fella because, as all of you could probably determine from his demeanor, he's a nice fella, right? And me... I can be a shark, right? The problem is, if I was to be a shark, that would put him on the defensive. And when a person's on the defensive, you don't necessarily get the kind of information that you ultimately want to get. So I chose not to be a shark, all right? But now I'm going to be a shark. And I want to point out a couple of discrepancies. At 4 minutes, 49.74 seconds into Dr. Singh's interview, his statement, he went on to explain that methane enters into the aquifer, the water table. It has a very short lifespan, and it breaks down into carbon monoxide, CO, and carbon dioxide, CO2. And he went on very specifically to say that he had analyzed the data from different sources and determined that what we were seeing was from the methane gas blowout in Aliso Canyon. All of you just heard it, all right? And I asked him, well, if that's the case, then since Aliso Canyon began leaking in October of last year and wasn't sealed off until February 22nd, which is when the Los Angeles Times reported, and the article's still on their website, reported that the Aliso Canyon leak had been sealed, then why didn't we get this big carbon monoxide reading from, you know, last October? Why all of a sudden on February 27th? And his answer was he would not comment on whether, you know, on the NASA satellite. So that was the first discrepancy. Then he went on to say at 7 minutes and 18 seconds into his interview that the USGS, United States Geological Service, has very extensive and sophisticated instruments throughout the San Andreas Fault. And that's when, you know, he again made reference to the Aliso Canyon leak. I called the Goddard Space Flight Center today. And I spoke to a fella named Stephen Paulson. He's the branch chief of modeling for NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. Very, very nice fella. And he explained that the satellite involved in this had suffered an anomaly which caused it to go into safe mode. And then it was restored to science mode on February 24th. And it was his view that the entire thing was an anomaly. The gas wasn't there. So we have Professor Singh saying that he analyzed it and the gas that he found led him to conclude that it came from Aliso Canyon, but that leak had been stopped on February 22, and Stephen Paulson from NASA Goddard Space Center said, no, the whole thing was an anomaly. We are rerunning the numbers, and we should have it done in a few days. I did say that I would, you know, contact him again next Monday. He agreed. And I would ask him, you know, what those rerun numbers showed. Here's the problem. We've got one scientist telling us he analyzed the data and he believes it came from the Aliso Canyon leak, even though that had been sealed days earlier. We have another scientist from NASA's Goddard Space Center saying no, the gas wasn't there. So which is it? Was the gas there or was the gas not there? We've got two conflicting scientists giving us different things. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I got to tell you, something does not sit right with me on this. And just this evening, I did some additional research, and I found a story on Fox 11 News in Los Angeles. It's just about a minute and a half long. But I think it's relevant to play this right now, and you'll understand why as you hear it.
And there's lots of internet-generated anxiety now here in the West about something like this, especially up in the Pacific Northwest. Cyberspace has gone haywire. Satellite images show, according to the buzz, we've had a carbon monoxide explosion in the West Coast, and that cloud of gas may mean an earthquake's coming. We wanted answers. Where do you go when you want to find out about earthquakes? California Institute of Technology, Caltech. Been here since 1891. Talks to us all the time about earthquakes whenever the ground moves. But on this thing that's got the internet shaking like an earthquake, nobody wants to talk about it.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, you know in your own lives, countless times, you have seen on television, you have read in newspapers about Caltech. Caltech says this, Caltech says that. But on this story, when that Fox 11 Los Angeles newspaper, TV reporter went to Caltech to ask them to comment on this carbon monoxide burst, Caltech didn't want to talk about it. All right? But he went further. Listen to this.
Satellite images show, according to the buzz, we've had a carbon monoxide explosion in the West Coast, and that cloud of gas may mean an earthquake's coming. We wanted answers. Where do you go when you want to find out about earthquakes? California Institute of Technology, Caltech, been here since 1891. Talks to us all the time about earthquakes whenever the ground moves. But on this thing that's got the internet shaking like an earthquake, nobody wants to talk about it.
I played the wrong clip. My bad. He later said in the later part of the interview, the story, that he went to the U.S. Geological Survey. You know, the people that Professor Singh pointed out have all sorts of instruments and everything. And the USGS declined to be interviewed on camera. Folks, this is a red flag to me. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but something stinks here. All right? Because on the one hand, we've got scientists saying there was no gas emission. It was an anomaly in the satellite data, the way the model interpreted the satellite data. Then we have another scientist saying he's looked at other data, and he says this carbon monoxide came from the Aliso Canyon well leak, which had been sealed on February 22, 5 days before these satellites picked up. And we didn't see any of this stuff previous to February 27th, whereas the Aliso Canyon field had been leaking since last October. Something stinks here. And I'm going to give you my personal take. You can believe it, not believe it. Just understand this is my personal opinion. I think there was a massive carbon monoxide leak. I think the satellite worked just fine and picked it up. The government never expected the general public to be looking at that stuff. And when it came out that the general public was looking at that stuff, the folks in government panicked, as they so often do, and decided, we got to put a stop to this right away. We cannot have the public panicking because an earthquake's coming. And I think an earthquake is coming. And I think, just my personal opinion, take it or leave it, I think the folks out there on the West Coast ought to be taking minimum steps to prepare in case something terrible happens. Bear in mind, they have proven carbon monoxide comes out of the ground before an earthquake. They documented it in Gujarat, India, for an earthquake that took place back in 2001. They documented gas being forced out of the ground in wells in Tangshan, China, for an earthquake that killed 250,000 people in 1976. And here we are in the United States of America and small portion of Canada, you know, the west coast of British Columbia, down along Vancouver. We have had now a massive bloom of carbon monoxide. Folks, there's too much at stake not to take some minimum steps, just minimum steps. Make sure you got canned food that, you know, won't go bad without refrigeration. Make sure you've got rice, grains, pasta that won't go bad. You know, give yourself the ability to have 14 days worth of food. Make sure you got some fresh water. Every human being requires 6 to 8 glasses of water a day. That's a half a gallon a day per person in order to live. So you need to have 14 days worth of water in your house to supply each and every human being in there. Now, you may not use this, and that's all right, because we're not talking about spending thousands of dollars to prepare. Make sure you got a flashlight and batteries. Make sure you got an AM/FM radio that works on batteries. Make sure you get a first aid kit. Make sure you got some spare medicine, because if the big one hits, the supply chains are going to be disrupted. None of this is going to break any of you financially. It's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. We will look at this story in the days ahead. But it is my personal opinion that there was a tremendous burst of carbon monoxide People are trying to cover it up. And why? What would be the motive for the government to cover it up? If people start leaving an area, it reduces economic activity. Government exists based on economic activity. Sales taxes, income taxes. If people leave for even 2 weeks, it is going to put a major damper on tax flow. Budgets are already tight. Budgets are already in trouble. The last thing they need is to lose more money. And I got to tell you, and it pains me to say this, some folks in government could care less if a bunch of people get killed as long as their paychecks keep coming. I am going to take a break. It is 10:40 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States. I'm going to open the phone lines. If you want to comment, call in now, 201-771-3013. It's the Hal Turner Show, live from New York City. I'll be right back.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
688 to 90-10-4.
...could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And I'm back. The final, 18 minutes or so of the Hal Turner Show. 201-771-3013. The phone lines are completely open. So you can get in and get on the air if you want to talk. I have the phone call with the guy from the Goddard Space Flight Center. And he's a very nice fella. I'm just going to sit on that for a while. See what he comes up with next Monday. See what the modified data looks like from the GEOS-3 and GEOS-5 and EAS Terra satellites, and hopefully, God will it, there won't be a huge earthquake out in the West Coast. You know what I noticed, though? If you go to the U.S. Geological Survey website and look at the earthquake reports, there was actually a 4.1 earthquake out on the West Coast the day before this gas was allegedly detected. So maybe... I'm just guessing. Maybe that earthquake allowed the gas to come out. I don't know. Now, the amount of gas being spewed out has dissipated. In the days that it was dissipating, we were able to see on that satellite that the gas was being emitted from three faults: the San Andreas, the Melonis, and the Elsinore faults. So it was very clear where this stuff was coming from. It has now receded. That could mean only one of two things. Either the pressure has eased off and the danger has receded, or there's no more gas left to squeeze out and the danger is still there. We don't know what the answer is. All right, let me go to the telephones. I appreciate you guys calling in. Hi, you're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Hal, this is Will from Chicago.
What's up, man?
This is going to be a really quick call this week because my phone battery is almost dead, but I just want to bring up something. You brought it up a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Do you remember a few weeks ago when you were talking about rumors that Marco Rubio was, like, there are pictures of him at, like, nightclubs in the 80s and, like, phone parties and stuff?
Yeah, gay clubs, yeah.
Okay, there were, someone whom I know in the part of that actually dug up an interview, and he was, about a month ago, he was on the Tonight Show, and they were talking about, him and Jimmy Fallon were talking about, like, the, about his campaign, and there was actually an offhand remark that Rubio made about going to phone parties. So I guess it might not be as much of a rumor as some people were thinking it was.
Well, you know, there is a picture of Marco Rubio today. You can see it on superstation95.com. It's down on the editor's choice section. He's holding up a sign. It says, see if I remember this. My boyfriend prefers Trump. I'm single now. So, all right. Now, Marco Rubio is holding this sign up. So I don't know if that means Marco Rubio has just announced that he's gay or whether, you know, maybe I'm misreading this. But Marco Rubio has this big sign in his hand with a big smile on his face, and the sign reads, "My boyfriend prefers Trump. I'm single now." So,
I'm going to have to take a look at that.
Yeah,
I didn't see that.
All right, well, it's there, right? It's superstation95.com on the editor's choice, which is down, you know, toward the middle of the page on the right-hand side.
Okay, I'm going to check that out. I'm up for like 1%. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Will. Take care.
All right.
Thanks for holding. You're on the Hal Turner Show. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Formerly Santa Monica.
Joe.
Hey, listen, Hal. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hal, listen, that guttural guy you had talking, your listenership must have just dropped right off.
Well.
You should have possibly done that offline and came up with the facts. So I like the show, but my God, I just couldn't take this guy. That's it.
All right, Joe in Santa Monica, thanks for the call. You know, I thought about that. I worried about that. But I decided that since this man wrote the scientific paper that was quoted in the Superstation article, that it was incumbent upon me to give him every benefit of the doubt and as much leeway as possible. I knew when he began talking that it would be a tough sell for a radio audience, but I believe I handled the man in a very friendly way and with kid gloves. And I believe that the information that he freely gave gives rise to very serious additional questions. Because if this satellite thing was an anomaly, as is claimed publicly by NASA, then why is it that Dr. Ramesh Singh said he saw other information from validated sources that led him to conclude that this CO came from the leak at Aliso Canyon? All of you heard him say that. And when this archive goes up on the website, you'll be able to play that back. So, you know, why, if there was none, then why did the professor say his other investigation led him to conclude this came from Aliso? Why did Caltech refuse to be interviewed on this topic by Fox 11 News in Los Angeles? Why did the United States Geological Survey decline to be interviewed by Fox 11 News in Los Angeles? Something's wrong, folks. Something is very wrong here. And since I have that doubt, you know, maybe I'm just paranoid. I don't know. I don't live in California, right? I live in New Jersey, right outside New York City, doing this show from the Superstation 95 studios in downtown Manhattan. I get to go on a train and go home after the show. There's not going to be an earthquake that, you know, makes New Jersey fall off into the ocean. There's something wrong. If I was a resident of the West Coast, I would be making some preparations. I'd make sure I had, you know, fresh water for my family, canned foods, you know, meat, beans, fish. I would make sure I had rice and grains and pasta. I'd make sure I'd have a water filter, right? And because if a big earthquake comes, it's going to bust up the water mains. It's not going to be water. So, and the stores, any that, you know, survive and are still open, you're going to need cash, right? Because the phone lines will be down. You probably won't be able to take credit cards. The ATMs will probably be down. You won't be able to get cash. So you should probably have, you know, a pocket full of cash to get you through a week or two. You need to have enough water to drink and to cook with. Never mind washing. And forget flushing the toilets, right? You're just going to have to make other arrangements. But you got to have water to survive. You can't survive without water. So I would have some of that. I already have a first aid kit. We already have flashlights with spare batteries, little AM, FM transistor radios with spare batteries. Those of you with barbecue grills, make sure your grill propane tank is topped off. Maybe get a spare so you can cook, right? And you got a car? Top off the gas tank right now. Top off, don't wait. Top it off and keep it topped off for the next week or two, right? You use the gas anyway, ultimately. So it's not going to cost you anything more to keep the tank topped off. Because if something terrible happens and you have to leave, you're not going to be able to get gas. Forget it. Not going to happen. What stations actually survive won't have electric, won't be able to pump gas. Where are you going to get it? Now, some of you have little portable generators so that you can give yourself some limited electricity. Do you have fuel? Right? You're not going to be able to get it if the big one hits. Get some fuel. But look, folks, be smart about this. Only get the amount that the law and safety allow. Right? Do not store fuel inside. Right? That's not legal, and it could set everything on fire, so don't do that. Right? And God forbid, do not ever use a generator inside a structure, because the carbon monoxide from the generator running would kill you. So, you know, you want to be smart about this. Just little preparations, creating a go bag for each member of the family. With some spare, you know, change of underwear, change of socks, pants, shirts, maybe a jacket or two. So if you have to spend some time outside because your house collapsed, then you won't have to worry about freezing to death or, you know, getting soaked through with rain. I mean, there's some little things you can do to protect yourself and to prepare. And I think you should, because as Dr. Singh pointed out, the gas was emitted in Gujarat, India, 2 or 3 days before the earthquake. The one in Tangshan, China, the gas started being emitted 2 weeks before the earthquake, on and off, and then 3 days before the earthquake, it really started getting hot and heavy, this gas coming up out of wells and villages. And bear in mind, in 1976, when this earthquake hit Tangshan, China, it killed 242,000 people. That's serious stuff. None of us can prevent an earthquake. None of us can forecast an earthquake. I can't. But, you know, we can look at the empirical data and scratch our heads and say, gee, if this happened over in Gujarat, India, could it have also just happened here in California? And with respect to what's in the ground, one other key point I want to make. There is oil in California. It is in shale, right? There's a lot of fracking going on out there. And in particular, there are something, shale formations called the Monterey Formations. That's where the oil and gas is in the shale. And you know what? If you go back and look at that satellite data from February 27th, the heaviest emissions coincide with the location of the Monterey Shale formations. Oh. So maybe that's where this stuff was being squeezed out of. Now, I hope and pray that you folks in the West Coast do not suffer a horrific earthquake. I don't want that to happen. You know, there's a lot of people joke that with the, you know, left-wing liberal zany antics going on in California and the garbage coming out of Hollywood and the what goes on up in Sodom by the Sea up there in San Francisco, people that joke from time to time that they wish California would just, you know, fall off into the ocean. I do not subscribe to that wish, right? There's a lot of good people out there, decent, God-fearing people. I don't want to see that kind of disaster happen. But something took place on February 27th, folks, something very unusual. It looks like there was a massive surge of carbon monoxide come up out of the ground. That can happen when the tectonic plates move. The primary emission points were the San Andreas, the Melonis, and the Elsinore faults. And I think you should take precautions just in case. Hey, look, a week or two from now, nothing happens. Eat the food. Use the water to wash your car. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, but it's better to be prepared and not need it than to need it and not have it. Speaking of needing it and not having it, I have had a computer crash over here, right? And it wiped out, we lost a disk drive. It wiped out a lot of the audio program, audio files that play commercials, play bumper music. We lost the outro music that exits this program, right? It's gone. We're going to have to, you know, remake it. And this crash happened late today, so we were not able to, we had to scramble to put together a audio automation for just for this show, right? So in a moment or two, outro music from a different radio show is going to begin to play. And so that's why the show is closing tonight with different music. We lost Atonement. We lost Extreme Ways, right? Those show, those songs that we sometimes closed with. So we'll have to get all that stuff back. But this goes to what I talked about last week. We're having some equipment failures. A lot of this equipment, you know, was stuffed under my bed by my wife and son when I got sent to Federal University back in 2010. You know, and it stayed under the bed until I came home in 2012, right? So some of this stuff's starting to fail. The mixer board, the audio automation computer. We talked about this last week, and I asked you to make donations to help us deal with these problems. $20 came in cash in the mail. $120 came in from two donors online. Now, this month marks the sixth month that I am back on the air after my little excursion with the federal government. Contract renewal is coming up, and I got to tell you that I'm not certain that Superstation 95 will be renewing. I know that I can continue on WBCQ, but the situation with money with Superstation 95 is such that I am not certain they're going to be willing to renew. So those of you who have been sitting on the sidelines for 6 months, either angry with me because I worked for the FBI or whatever, you know, time is up. You know, crap or get off the pot, because I'm in the hole to the station here for the radio show. And I will be able, ultimately, to take care of that, but I may not be able to continue to accrue debt after March. And who knows? They may just say no, right? And I have this feeling that they might have already decided that, because the contract renewal option was mentioned casually to me today here at the station. And a reference was made to, you know, money talks. So I kind of seeing some writing on the wall that is very uncool. And I had hoped that, as took place in years past, I could rely on you folks to make donations so that we don't have to try to go out and get commercial sponsors. And if we have to get commercial sponsors, then we're censored because of commercial sponsor censorship. Thanks for listening. I'm Hal Turner. Good night from New York.